Chapter 23. I clenched my teeth and kicked my legs. The duct tape around my ankle gave way, but it was too late to do me any good. I didn't have time to get my weight beneath me to run, but I made the gesture in any case. Just one of those things you do when you're about to die, I guess. "Mr. Hendricks," came a very hard, very calm voice. "If Parker does not put down the tire iron in the next second or two, please shoot him dead."
"Yes, sir, Mr. Marconi,"
Hendricks' rumbling basso answered. I looked over to my right to see gentleman Johnny Marconi standing in a gray Italian business suit. Hendricks stood in front of him and a bit to one side in a much cheaper suit, huge and holding a pump-action shotgun with a short barrel. Its stock worked into a pistol grip in his meaty paws. The gaping black mouth of the barrel was leveled at Parker's head. Parker's face snapped around to focus on Marconi at the same time as mine did. Parker's jaw clenched and his eyes narrowed into furious slits. His weight shifted from one foot to the other as though he were preparing to throw the tire iron.
"That's a 12-gauge riot gun, Mr. Parker," Marconi said. "I am fully aware of your rather special endurance at this time of the month. Mr. Hendricks' weapon is loaded with a solid slug ammunition, and after several rounds, have torn literal pounds of flesh from your body and ruptured the majority of your internal organs, I am reasonably certain that even you would perish."
Marconi smiled very politely, while Hendricks clicked the safety off the weapon and settled his feet as though he were expecting firing the weapon would knock him down.
"Please," Marconi said, "put down the tire iron."
Parker glanced back at me, and I could see the beast raging in his eyes, wanting to howl out and bathe in blood. It terrified me, made me go cold, right through my gut and down through my loins. There was more fury and rage there than any of the other members of the Street Wolves had demonstrated. Their own berserk losses of control had looked like a child's tantrum next to what I saw in Parker's eyes. But he controlled it. He lowered his arm, slowly, and took two steps back from me, and I felt my breath whisper out in a sigh of relief. I wasn't dead. Yet. My kick hadn't quite dragged the blanket off me, and I was still settled with my back against the steel post. They didn't know I was loose beneath the rough wool. It wasn't much of an advantage, but it was all I had. I needed to find a way to use it, and fast.
"My people are coming," Parker growled. "If you try any more of that heavy-handed shit, I'll have you torn apart."
"They are coming," Marconi agreed placidly, "but they are not yet here. Their motorcycles have all suffered flat tires, quite mysteriously. We have time to do business." I heard his shoes cross the concrete floor toward me, and I looked up at him. Marconi met my eyes without fear, a man in his mature prime, his hair immaculately graying at the temples, his custom-made suit displaying a body kept fit in spite of the advancing years. His eyes were the faded green of dollar bills and as opaque as mirrors.
"Hi, John," I said. "You've got good timing."
Marconi smiled.
"And you have a way with people, Dresden," he said, glancing at the silent Parker with unveiled amusement. "You must have read a book. I'm already reasonably certain as to your reaction, but I thought I would give you another chance."
"Another chance to what?"
"I received a phone call today," Marconi said. "A Harley McFinn somehow discovered my personal number. He was quite irate. He said that he knew it was me who had destroyed his circle and set him up, and that he was going to deal with me tonight."
"I'd say you've had it then, John. Harley can be fairly destructive."
"I know. I saw the news programs from the station last night. A loop guru, is he?"
I blinked.
"How did you..."
Marconi waved a hand. "The report you gave to Lieutenant Murphy. Such things have to be paid for, and thus copied and filed and copied and filed. It wasn't hard to obtain a copy for myself." I shook my head.
"Money isn't going to buy off Harley McFinn."
"Quite," Marconi said.
"And my parents, God rest their souls, were in no position to leave me anything, much less articles of silver, or I deal with him myself. I have no idea who told him that I had wronged him, or why, but it seems perfectly clear that he believes it,
Which brings us to you, Mr. Dresden.
He reached into that expensive Italian jacket and drew out a folded sheaf of papers, the contract I'd seen before. I want to make a deal with you. I stared at him in silence. The same stipulations as before, Marconi continued. In addition, I promise you, give you my personal oath, that I will see to it that the pressure is taken off of Lieutenant Murphy. I do have some friends at the mayor's office, and I'm certain something could be worked out. I started to tell him to go to hell, but I bit back the words. I was trapped at the moment. If I ran, Parker would probably lose it and tear me apart. If he didn't, Marconi would just point his finger and the hulking Mr. Hendricks would put me down with a 12-gauge slug. And Murphy, in spite of recent misunderstandings, was my friend. Or maybe it was more accurate to say that in spite of what had gone on lately, I was still Murphy's friend. Saving your job, getting the pressure from the politician's offer. Isn't that why I'd gotten involved in this to begin with? Wouldn't Murphy thank me for helping her? No, I thought. Not like that. She wouldn't want that kind of help. Magic she could accept. Help from money generated by human suffering, graft, and deception was a different story. Marconi looked good in his gray suit and his perfect hair and his manicured hands, but he wasn't. My own hands weren't clean, but they were free. Things were desperate and getting worse the longer I waited. Maybe I could pull off enough magic to get myself out of this. I drew in a breath and focused on a pile of loose tools and metal parts on a workbench 20 feet away. I gathered together threads of will, feeling the pressure build with a sort of skewed intangibility to it, something I'd never felt before. I focused on my goal, on the rush of air that would lift the tools and parts and hurl them at Marconi, Parker, and Hendricks like so many bullets. And I prayed that I wouldn't catch myself at the edges of it on accident and get myself killed. I'd be breaking the first law of magic if any one of them died, and I might have to deal with the White Council later, but hell's bells, I didn't want to die on that concrete floor. My head pounded, and I pushed the pain aside, focused, and breathed out, Vento Civitas. The energy I'd gathered whispered out of me. The tools jumped and rattled in place, and then fell still again. Fire erupted behind my eyes. The pain was blinding, and I sucked in a breath and bowed my head forward, struggling not to fall to one side and reveal my lack of duct-tapedness. Oh, stars, it hurt like hell, and I clenched my teeth to keep from crying out. My chest heaved and strained to give me enough breath. I blinked tears out of my eyes and straightened again, facing Marconi. I didn't want him to see the weakness. I didn't want him to know my magic had failed. Interesting, Marconi said, glancing at the workbench and then back to me. Perhaps you've been working too hard, he suggested. But I'm still willing to make the offer, Mr. Dresden. Otherwise, you understand, I have no interest in your well-being, and I will be forced to leave you here with Mr. Parker and his associates. If you do not come to work for me, you will die. I glared up at Marconi and gathered in a breath to spit out a curse at him. To hell with him and his whole stinking breed of parasites. Polite and smiling bastards who didn't care about the lives they ruined, the people they destroyed, so long as business continued as usual. If I was going to die here, I was going to lay out a curse on Marconi that would make the grimmest old fairy tales you ever heard of sound like pleasant daydreams. I glanced at Parker, who was glaring suspiciously at Marconi, and stifled the curse as well, and lowered my head to hide my expression from Marconi. I had an idea. He dies anyway, Parker growled. He's mine. You never said anything about him leaving with you. Marconi stood, his mouth settled in a tight smile. Don't start with me, Parker, Marconi said. I'll take what I want to take. Last chance, Dresden. This wasn't part of the deal, Parker said. I need him. I'll kill you before I let you take him. Parker put one hand behind his back, as though scratching an itch. I glanced over toward the office door behind him and saw Flatnose crouched there in the doorway, mostly shielded by the door and unnoticed.
Perfect.
You needn't worry, Parker, Marconi said, his tone satisfied. He won't accept my offer. He'd rather die. I lifted up my head and kept my expression as blank as I could. Give me a pen, I said. Marconi's mouth dropped open. It was an intense pleasure to see the surprise on his face. What? He said. I enunciated each word carefully. Give me a pen. I'll sign your contract. I glanced aside at Parker and said more loudly, anything to get away from these animals. Marconi stared at me for a moment, then reached toward his pocket. I could see his eyes, see him searching my expression. The gears were spinning in his head as he tried to work out what I was doing. Parker let out a sudden scream of rage and hurled the tire iron at Hendricks, who dodged to one side, too quickly for a man his size, and lifted his weapon. The office door exploded open and Flatnose threw himself onto the big man. They both went down to the concrete, struggling for possession of the shotgun. The wizard's mine, Parker howled and threw himself at Marconi. Marconi moved like a snake in his zillion-dollar business suit and made a curved knife appear in his hands. He swept it in an arc that was followed by a spray of blood from Parker's wrist, and the lycanthrope howled. I got up and ran like hell toward the door. My legs were shaky, my balance wasn't great, but I was moving, and I thought I had a fair chance of getting away. Over to my left, there was a roar of the shotgun going off, and a wet red spray that went all over one wall and the ceiling. I didn't stop to see who had been killed, just jerked open the door. Agent Philip Denton stood 5 feet away from me in the cold mist of the autumn rain. The veins in his forehead were throbbing, and his short hair was frosted by mist. He was flanked by the pot-bellied Agent Wilson in his rumpled suit, his mostly bald head shining, and by the lean, savage-looking woman, Ben, her dark skin even darker in the evening's gloom and the glow of the streetlights, her sensuous mouth peeled back into a startled snarl. Denton blinked in surprise, then narrowed his intensely gray eyes. The wizard mustn't escape, he said, his voice calm and precise. Kill him. Ben's eyes gleamed and she hissed something under her breath while reaching a hand into her jacket. Wilson did the same. I brought my forward momentum to a sudden halt, fell, and started scrabbling back into the building. But instead of drawing guns out of their jackets, they changed. It happened fast, nothing like you see in the movies. One moment there were two human beings standing there, and the next there was a flicker of shadow, and in a pair of enormous gaunt wolves, one the gray of Ben's mane, one the same brown as Wilson's receding hairline. They were huge, 6 feet long, including the tail, and as high as my belly at the shoulders. Their entirely human eyes shone, as did their bared fangs. Denton stood between them, his eyes gleamed with some dark breed of joy. And then he hissed, throwing his hands toward me. As though thrown by the motion, both wolves hurled forward. I flung myself through the door and slammed it closed. There were heavy thuds as the wolves hit the door behind me. I saw a motion to my right and threw myself down just before Hendricks pulled the trigger. The riot gun belched forth flame and huge sound and blew a hole the size of my face in the door behind me. I could still hear Parker's furious snarling somewhere in the dark, and I scrambled forward behind the bulk of the car and then ran toward the back of the cavernous garage, staying low. Outside, there was the thunder of a dozen engines and the sharp, heavy sounds of gunfire. Evidently, the street wolves had returned. I stumbled through the darkness and tried not to make enough sound to give someone a chance to shoot me. The door flew open at the front of the garage, letting in a flood of dim light that didn't help me much. I reached the back corner and sank down into it, then grabbed at something that turned out to be a toolbox. I came out with a heavy wrench and gripped it tightly. I was alone. I hurt myself using too much of my magic while on the go-go potion, and I didn't have anything left to throw now. Except for the wrench in my hands, I was unarmed. All around me, in the garage, there were sounds of gunshots and screams and thuds of flesh. As the animals fought for control of the jungle, and it was only a matter of time before one of them stumbled across a weakened and exhausted wizard named Harry Dresden. Talk about frying pans and fires.